I'm back. This is Dr. Diana Wiley. I'm your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. And I can say this with great confidence. When it comes to men's most prized anatomical attribute, there is likely a lot that you don't know, men and women. So let's take a long, hard look at the wonderful world of penises, shall we? And I have a wonderful guest. He's actually returning for the third time, but the first time in 6 months, Dr. Dudley Danoff, urologist extraordinaire. Hello, Dr. Danoff.
Hi. How are you?
I'm good, and it's so good to have you back. What better person can we talk to about penises? You have a book called Penis Power, The Ultimate Guide to Male Sexual Health. And before I give your credentials, I've been kind of eager to tell a joke that you may have heard, but maybe not. But I think you'll like it, and I think our listeners will like it.
I'm well ears.
Okay, good. A penis has a sad life. His hair is a mess. His family is nuts. His nearest neighbor is an asshole. His best friend is a pussy. And his owner beats him.
Very good. I heard parts of that, but not in its entirety.
Okay.
Very good. I like it.
And a little bit later in the show, because we spoke off the air, you're going to tell a joke, or maybe even more than one. So let me tell the listening audience that Dr. Dudley Danoff is president and founder of the Cedars-Sinai Tower Urology Medical Group in Los Angeles. And for over a quarter of a century, he's taught on the clinical faculty of the UCLA School of Medicine. And his book is all about banishing stress from the bedroom and making sex fun again. And don't we all need that? I was very pleased because after I interviewed Dr. Danoff last February and last March, then he presented a fabulous paper at our ASECT June Monterey, California conference. So I got to meet you in person, and that was, and your wife, your lovely wife.
Thank you.
That was wonderful.
Thank you.
And, you know, we just need more doctors who have all the knowledge you have to present at sex therapist conferences. Because we need to collaborate a little more.
You know, it's true. What surprised me, I have not appeared at many of those conferences, is how few MDs were there. I think that there is a big gap between what you people do, meaning the sex therapists, and what we do, meaning the urologists. Mm-hmm. And there should be a lot more interface and a lot more crossover because the two are very, very interrelated. So I was happy to be there. It was an extremely attentive audience, good questions, good interaction. I enjoyed every moment of it.
Terrific. Well, we enjoyed having you there, and you gave us, and I'm going to allude to this a little bit later in the interview, a really good handout. When men with sexual problems should see a medical doctor, and so I'm going to come back to that as we go along here. The big question is, and we covered this before, but it's been 6 months on this program, so why did you write this book, this Penis Power book, The Ultimate Guide to Male Sexual Health, a wonderful book?
So I am a urologist, a board certified. I am a surgeon. I'm a Princeton graduate, Yale Medical School, Columbia Presbyterian, the best education in the world. And every time, and I've seen more penises than can fill a Rose Bowl professionally, and every time I would say the word penis, people would giggle, laugh, think it's a pejorative word when in fact it's a body part. So, you know, men and women are really ignorant about the penis and the male sexual apparatus in general. And, it's really, really sad because men are so, I call it penocentric.
Yes.
And in many respects, the penis is the organ, of a man's essence, and it's the axis around which the male personality rotates. So men are the same in the bedroom as they are in the boardroom, in the living room. And I wanted, as a mainstream urologic surgeon, IV educated, to get the penis out of the closet.
Out of the closet.
Mm-hmm. It's a body part. You know, when I do my television stuff, here's our favorite Beverly Hills urologist, Dr. Dudley Downer, author of Penis Power, and the audience giggles. I mean, get over it. It's like an elbow. It's like a knee. It's a body part. The penis to the urologist is what the heart is to the cardiologist, or
yes,
the stomach is to the gastroenterologist. Get over it. So that was what was behind my reasoning.
Well, I have recommended your book, Penis Power. And by the way, listening audience, and I'll put this in my write-up after we do the show, but if you go to penispowerbook.com, you can get the book and you can learn more about the book, although we're going to fill you in during this show. But I've recommended your book to so many of my clients, my patients, with good results. I mean, it's really, you write it in such an easy way, easy to understand. There's humor in it, and you have, because you are the urologist to the stars, and I know you're not, you won't say whether you're their urologist, but Larry King has given you a recommendation, a blurb on your book, Wolfgang Puck, and others. And I just have something to contribute about Wolfgang Puck. When I lived in Los Angeles, a good friend introduced me to him, and upon realizing I was a sex therapist, he observed, "The two essentials of life are food and sex." And so we smiled at each other in recognition of that. But, yeah, food and sex. Of course, you and I would probably put sex before food.
Well,
possibly.
I think there's some merit to that.
Yeah. So you wrote this book, and you have lots of people praising it. And also, since it was published in 2011, you've had lots of feedback.
Oh, my
good
gosh,
feedback.
Yes. Yeah,
yes.
It's currently being translated into German.
Oh, wow.
I just got an offer from France to do it, and Japan, of all places.
Oh, so. Japan, they, I know something about, I did some research in Japan, and so I think they need it.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. But anyway, I'm very excited about it. It's been very well received. You know, what's funny is it's insightful, it's medically accurate, it's written so everybody can understand it. So I've had a blast with it. You know, I am a busy urologic surgeon, so this is a completely different hat that I'm wearing.
Yeah.
I've enjoyed every minute of it. And I enjoy speaking, you know, with people like you who I would ordinarily not speak to on the radio for an hour.
Yes, and I know you've taken an interruption in your practice to do this, and I'm very grateful.
More than my pleasure, Dean.
Oh,
more
thank
than my
you.
Pleasure.
Well, you were so kind in your pre-interview with me. You said, we're probably going to have as much fun as we did in our last interview, and I think that that's going to happen.
Okay, I'm here for it. Or as they say in urology, I'm up for it.
Right, you're up for it. Yes. So, we spoke before about sex and the brain. So let's just briefly touch on that before we go to a really important part of your book, which is the super potent man. So, we've all, pretty much everybody's heard that the biggest sex organ is between the brain, but can you talk more about sex and the brain?
Well, there is, at least in men, and I am the expert on penises and men and their sexuality, but for a man, there is a direct access, there is a high tension wire, there is a steel rod that goes from his brain to his penis.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, you know, as I say, your penis reflects your personality. It's a more accurate barometer of who you are at any particular moment than your own conscious assessment. It's 99% between your ears and 1% between your legs in most cases.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about desire. It's all about imagination. It's all about tenderness. So, you know, I almost say that your penis has five senses. You know, it responds to smell. It responds to sound. It responds to touch. So that's the brain working. That's the penis-brain connection. And it's inseparable.
Yeah, in my experience, a number of the men that I see with erectile dysfunction or a rapid ejaculation, they're not very kind to their penises. You know, they're constantly...
It's your best friend. You got to wake up every morning and say, it's you and I, buddy. Let's conquer the world. And, you know, you can't wish it was bigger or larger or, you know, or fatter or longer. You say, this is mine. This is what the Lord gave me. I'm stuck with you. Let's make the best of it.
Well, that's a pretty good segue into your description of the super potent man. And you were interviewed by the Monterey County Weekly just before you presented for the ASEC. Conference, and you said there that the penis is very sensitive to anger, to anxiety, to passion, very sensitive. And super potent man, you say, simply stated, it's the power of positive thinking as applied to the penis.
I think, you know, in a single word or a single sentence, that sums it up.
Mm-hmm.
It's as big as you think it is. It's as reliable as you think it is. It's as satisfying as you think it is. And it's all about, I mean, I'm not a selfish person, and I'm not recommending be selfish, but when it comes to the penis, it's all about me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you must be compassionate, you must be warm, you must be open, you must be sharing. But you got to have perfect confidence in that thing between your legs for a man. And it's all out there. You know, a woman can hide it. A woman could fake it.
Right.
A man, he's either up catching the touchdown in the last quarter of the Super Bowl or he's down and out.
Yes. And men can't fake it. And I bet on occasion they wish that they could.
Oh, more than one occasion.
Yeah. So, I really like this in your book on page 271. You say, the superpotent man is happy. If there were a motto for superpotency, it would probably be, enjoy life to the fullest, and the rest will follow.
Well, not only is it a good motto for a super potent man or penis power, I think it's a good motto for life in general.
It is. It really is. Because we do move toward what we visualize. And it's really important. Now, you say the personality and penis traits are fundamentally connected. You just said that. But I'm looking at your book and on 273. If you are someone who desires to become not only a great person but also a great lover, you must be willing to confront yourself and address the aspects of your personality that may be holding you back from emotional and sexual happiness. And by the way, Dr. Danoff, that's why a number of my clients, my patients, come to see me, because they need to talk about that.
Yes.
And that's why sex therapists and urologists or naturopaths and sexual medicine or OBGYNs need to collaborate more.
No, and I agree. And, you know, men are closed in. Every man wants to be a hero. No man wants to say he's weak. No man wants to reach out for help. I mean, that is not the nature of man. You know, I'm the king, I'm the hero, I'm the winning quarterback, I'm not the injured player, I'm not the man who's sick, I'm not the man that can't support my family, go to work, you know, have an erection 24/7. That's the problem with men. They're very reluctant to talk about it if they have a problem. And And that's why they need the sex therapist. Obviously, the urologist is more focused on the medical aspects. And we can assure patient all the apparatus is there, all the chemistry is right, all the electrophysiology is there, and now you need some help beyond what the urologist can give you.
Yes, and I have been seeing more and more, because I'm in Seattle, and we have Microsoft here and Amazon, and we've other high-tech companies, and they often recruit people from India who are brilliant. But in India, there's practically zero sex education. I just saw before this show a couple from Iran, and there's also not much sex education there. So what the sex therapist has time to do is to do some sex education,
right,
which you may not have much time to do, although you're such an amazing urologist that I bet you do.
Well, I give them
your book.
Yeah, but but in a very informal way. Obviously,
yeah.
Seeing a ton of patients every day with multiple medical problems, cancers and stones and infection,
mm-hmm,
and bleeding, and so,
mm-hmm,
we don't have time to really sit down and delve into their developmental past or some event that might have happened along the way. So
right,
that's where we need the sex therapist, because lots of people are plagued with those kinds of things that a medical doctor just cannot address.
Mm-hmm. And it really can contribute these early traumas or whatever.
Yeah, I thought when you were going to refer to Silicon Valley up where you are and all these bright young guys who are very, very wealthy at a premature age, and now they seem to have the power, they're kings of the universe, and then they look down and they say, oh my God, why isn't my dingle dangling? I mean, why isn't it
right,
behaving the way I want? So it creates a lot of self-doubt. A guy said, well, I've got all the money in the world. I've got the fast cars, and I've got the beautiful house. But why isn't that thing working up to my expectations?
Yeah, it's devastating for most.
Yeah.
I also see a number of men who are on the Asperger's syndrome.
Right.
Spectrum, I should say. Spectrum.
Right.
And that's, that's more functional autism. So they have social difficulties.
Right.
I mean, they can do coding all day long, and Microsoft loves them.
Right.
But they have some social difficulties,
right,
and some sexual difficulties.
Yes. I've seen that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, one of the things that's out there are the three, the three main drugs, Cialis, Viagra, Levitra. They will help a lot of men. I mean, again, I've said this before, and I think to you and to many audiences, these are not drugs of desire. They're drugs,
yes,
of performance. So, for any reason, particularly if there's performance anxiety, I mean, these drugs can be very, very helpful, not so much as a crutch, but as a bridge,
mm-hmm,
from getting where you are to where you would like to be. And we're seeing more use of this drug in the younger patients who present with ED for a variety of reasons, not necessarily medical reasons.
Yes, and we, off the air, we spoke about younger men presenting with erectile dysfunction.
Yeah, and that group, it's, almost 100% psychological. And the urologist,
yeah,
I have a little algorithm when somebody comes in with especially a young person or even an,
mm-hmm,
older person with erectile dysfunction. And, we plug them in. We do all of the blood tests, testosterone, pituitary function, diabetes screening, testosterone levels. And then we do penile blood flow, and we do Dopplers of the testicles. So at the end of the day, if all of the physiological elements are intact, then we have to go to step two. And sometimes we treat a lot of our younger patients, with Cialis, Viagra, or Levitra as, again, not so much as a crutch, but as a bridge.
As a bridge. And I have found that often just taking one of those PDE5 inhibitors helps a man with his confidence so that he knows that he has a reliable erection with his girlfriend, with his wife, and he can then get more confidence about his erectile abilities.
You know, self-doubt is a killer. If a man is having trouble with erections and then begins to doubt, you know, his ability, that becomes, you know, it's like the dog, the proverbial dog, you know, chasing his tail in ever decreasing circles until he disappears up the you know what. So it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. You know, this negative feedback, it's not working. Oh, my God, self-doubt. Self-doubt breeds more self-doubt, less confidence, less ability to get an erection. I mean, it's a horrible, horrible circle to get involved in.
Yes, and it is so self-defeating, as you point out.
Right.
Now, I bet as a urologist, you ask about or you test for, as I understand it, three to five are the average number of erections that occur while man is sleeping.
Correct. So that's called nocturnal penile tumescence, or sometimes called the NPT test. So that's kind of the sine qua non to separate psychological ED from physiologic ED. So the story is that every man from being a tiny little baby until being a very, very old man will get an involuntary erection in the middle of the night when all the psychological factors are off, assuming that all the plumbing and the electricity and the hormones are intact. So if he does not get an erection at night, we then say, well, the psychological factors are off the table. And now we have to treat him medically. But it's a very, very effective test. And so one of the questions we always ask somebody who comes in with ED or their partner, do you get an erection in the middle of the night when you're sleeping?
And sometimes they don't know that, but I know in the old days we used to prescribe a stamp test where you put stamps around the circumference of the penis. But now you've got, what do you have now?
Well, it looks like a mini blood pressure cuff hooked to something that looks like an EK electrocardiogram unit. So it's a little cuff, and we hook it up at night. And it actually gives us a graph, the number of erections. Do they have erections at the tip, at the base, in the middle, what the duration of the erection is. So it's very more scientific than the stamp roll.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Right.
So let's move on before the break, at least to talk a little bit about performance anxiety, premature ejaculation, which is often called now rapid ejaculation. And you have so many good things to say about this. I just can't say enough about your book. It's the best book I have read on the subject, and that's why, in fact, the last couple that I had, I brought the book out and suggested it. And, you know, a lot of younger people now are taking pictures with their phones. So she took a picture of the book to be sure that she got it right.
Yeah, well, it's certainly available on Amazon or in the bookshops. It's all over the place. You know, with reference to performance anxiety, look, anxiety is bad in life. It gets your blood pressure up. It gets your heart rate rapid. But anxiety is an absolute killer when it comes to penis performance. So I put that right up there with anger. Anger, anxiety is an erection killer. But you have to, I mean, easier said than, you know, done, doctor. Easy for you to say, don't be anxious.
Right, exactly.
But you got to compartmentalize it. You got to put that anger, that anxiety in a little box and lock it up and leave it outside the bedroom door. Anxiety has no place in sexuality at all. You've got to be confident. And it's easier said sometimes than done. But if you can't do it yourself, then you need the help. I mean, as far as premature or quick ejaculation, I mean, first we define it. So premature or too quick ejaculation is, you know, a man can't sustain an erection and he ejaculates within 2 minutes. A lot of your audience won't admit it, but most men, 7.5 to 9 minutes on average, older men a little bit longer perhaps. And the quickness of ejaculation is inversely proportional to both age. So as age increases, the incidence or the time between ejaculations is greater, and is also inversely proportional to the number of times you ejaculate. So even if a young man, you know, who is capable of ejaculating 3 or 4 times in a day, if he's doing it 6 or 7 times in a day, the sixth and the seventh time, it's going to be much, much longer. The refractory period will be longer. So those are just physiologic facts, and men have to be realistic about it.
Great. True. So we're going to go to a break, and when we come back, Dr. Danoff and I will discuss the suck job, which he says is a much better description than the blow job, and he'll explain why. And we have more to discuss, including prostate cancer and maybe remedial surgeries or interventions when the man is still impotent and incontinent after years after a surgery, and some women's complaints and some myths. Honestly, we have so much to discuss. And Dr. Danoff, I am thrilled you're back because I believe that our listening audience benefits so much. So stay with us, and we'll be right back.
Thank you, Dave.
You're welcome. Dr. Diana Wiley here with my urologist extraordinaire, wonderful man. I just think so highly of you, Dr. Danoff. And he's written a great book, Penis Power. I recommend it to all of you. And when Dr. Danoff was interviewed in the Monterey County Weekly, before he presented at our Monterey ASEC conference, the question was, and the answer was a little bit off in terms of how your interviewer heard you, but he asked you, you write, a man receiving oral sex has a unique effect on his arousal. And you say, yeah, oral sex is called a blow job, but that's a misnomer. It's a suck job. Explain the physics of this for us, Dr. Danoff.
Yes. Well, one of the things that allows a penis to fill with blood is what we call passive venous, negative venous pressure. So that if you create a vacuum, either by the sucking motion in oral sex or by a device we call a VED, a vacuum erectile device, in which you insert your penis and a vacuum is created, venous blood fills the penis in a passive sort of a way, and then you could put a constricting band around the base of the penis. So even somebody that does not have adequate arterial circulatory flow to the penis will get an erection. So many of my older patients tell me that, you know, oral sex is about the only way they can get an erection.
Mm-hmm.
You know, of course, there's a psychological factor of your partner. I mean, as a man, your partner doing something so extraordinarily selfless as opposed to selfish.
Right. It's very intimate.
Very intimate, and it's a very, very important thing for people who have sexual relationship to be able to understand that and the needs of a man. So this brings me to a wonderful story about our friend Donald Trump.
I want to hear that story.
We all know the Trumpster, and we all know, you know, his ego. So the story goes something: a woman gets on the elevator in Donald Trump's tallest building in the world, and she gets on the 23rd floor, and she looks up in the elevator. There, standing in front of her, is the Donald himself.
Mm-hmm.
She looks up in awe. She said, "Oh my God, I can't believe that I'm on the elevator with Donald Trump, and he's going up to his penthouse office on the 156th floor." And she says to him, "You know, I always dreamed, I always imagined that I could give you oral sex. Can I give you oral sex on the way up the elevator?" And Donald Trump kind of looks down at her and strokes his chin and says, "Well," he said, "what's in it for me?" So, you know, first of all,
talk
it's a
about
wonderful
narcissism.
Story because it perfectly describes the character of Donald Trump.
Right.
And secondly, you know, for a woman to perform fellatio on her partner, it's a very unselfish thing to do. It's something very special.
Well, it is, and I think for evolved women who enjoy their sexuality and want to bring pleasure to their lover, it becomes a very satisfying, almost powerful act, because you have the power to bring this kind of pleasure to your male lover.
Well, there's no question about it, and I can certainly speak from personal experience.
Yeah.
It's very pleasurable.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
I think Most men will say that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Except some teenagers, when they, you know, they're young, their partner is wearing braces, that always becomes a little problematic.
Oh, yeah. There have been some...
That was a bit of a joke.
I know. But you, in your book, you talk about this. And,
oh, yes. I talk about it at great length.
At great length.
Yeah.
And how to do it well. And I think that the thing that men want most in a female lover, in fact, a survey of only 500 men, but still 500 men, said the number one feature that they'd like in a female lover is enthusiasm. So a man can tell when his lover is performing fellatio with enthusiasm, that she's enjoying it. She isn't just doing it robotically.
Right.
And he can feel it, and it's going to turn him on and make him harder.
Oh, absolutely. And so it's both the psychological effect of seeing someone perform this selfless act, and it's also the mechanics of the, quote, sucking, creating this vacuum, which is this negative filling pressure, and that's what allows the penis to fill up with even more blood. So assuming a man has arterial function, he's able to get some blood in the penis, the sucking motion pulls extra blood, venous blood, into the penis and makes it even firmer. So it works in many, many ways.
So, but some older couples do get the vacuum, the VED, the vacuum device.
Yes.
And what you say in your book, and it seems to me it would be true, that a woman performing fellatio on her man is even better. But,
oh, my gosh, yes.
Yes. But still, the VED, the vacuum device, is effective.
Oh, it is. It's a very effective tool, and it's definitely on our list. I mean, I often say to a patient, it becomes a little bit awkward. It looks like something out of the Marat Sade.
Right.
But it is. You know, you've got to put your penis into this cylinder. Then you've got to pump the cylinder to create the vacuum. Then you've got to get a rubber band device to constrict the outflow. So, you know, it's a bit cumbersome, but I have many, 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 many patients who think it's just a wonderful device. So it is out there. It's on the menu.
Yes, and I gather from ads at the end of AARP and so on that there
it's a hot seller.
It's a hot seller, right. And they've improved it.
Oh, yes. Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So I wanted to ask you, Dr. Danoff, about prostate cancer, because I get some clients here and there who, like 10 years ago, had a non-nerve-sparing surgery with a surgeon who just kind of went in and got the cancer out. And so 10 years later, 15 years later, these guys, still relatively young, are suffering from impotence and incontinence. Are there any remedial surgeries or interventions for these guys?
Yeah, well, let me start with the good news first. So
good.
In today's era, today's modern medicine, with the use of robotic surgery, which is the greatest advance that I've seen in my more than 30 years of doing prostate surgery, this idea of nerve sparing, impotence, incontinence is just non-existent. In the hands of a skilled robotic surgeon, it's like falling off a log. In the older technique, it was a bit hit and miss. There was a lot of nerve damage, a lot of nerve injury, because we just didn't have the knowledge or the skills to do nerve sparing. So we do have a lot of the older fellas who are still having difficulty. So they could use the PDE5 inhibitors, Viagra. They can use injection therapy, which is prostaglandin E1. Directly injected into the base of the penis. That's a vasoactive substance, increases blood flow. They can use the Muse system, M-U-S-E, which is a little pellet which you put in the tip of the urethra. It also has a prostaglandin E1, but it's absorbed through the mucosa. You can use the VED. And then, of course, we have this whole line of prosthetic devices, which are cylinders with pumps that can be implanted. It's very analogous to a breast implant in a woman, and those are, you know, very effective when all else fails. I have, you know, many, many hundreds of patients who are very, very happy with the pump device.
Right. Right. Now, you, in your book, you write about the effectiveness of the Muse. Many years ago, when the Muse was just being developed, I came on board as a therapist who dealt with couples to get their reaction. They wanted my reaction to how a couple might deal with this. So the pellet in the... Now, that was the early 90s, and I think that now it's even improved.
Well, there is still a pellet.
A lot of men
don't like it. So if we want to use prostaglandin E1, the injection seems to be the preferred method of delivering it. But many men are adverse to sticking a small, you know, needle in the base of their penis and not on the tip. So Muse is still out there and it's still available, and it is a pellet. So it's the same chemically active substance, but it's absorbed through the mucosa of the urethra, of the lining in the penis. So it's, you know, it's not widely used, but it still is out there as an alternative.
Yes.
So again, I can't emphasize enough that no man, you know, no man in his 40s or 50s or 60s should go without prostate cancer screening. Because the way we can cure men of prostate cancer is by early diagnosis.
Right.
And the treatment today, utilizing the robotic surgery, is so far improved. The only change that I tell my patients is that then when they have an orgasm, the sensation will be different because no ejaculatory fluid will come out because we're removing the prostate.
Right.
So, but other than that, there's very, very, very little difference. So we don't want, you know, men dying of prostate cancer with an erection. Mm-hmm. We want them to get good treatment, and there are good ways of preserving potency, preserving the nerve function, and preserving, you know, a good, solid sexual life after prostate surgery.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm seeing a couple. He's 72, she's 71. And last year he had the robotic surgery, and it was his surgeon who referred the couple to me.
Right.
But he did his Kegels, he did everything his doctor said. He has no incontinence, and he, with Viagra, he is able to get an erection, and with his wife's stimulation.
Yeah, but, you know, you're talking about a 72-year-old man who's in a long relationship with the same woman.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, absent the surgery, he would still need a little help with a PDE5 inhibitor.
Absolutely.
And some stimulation. So, yeah, he's not much off the normal. And, you know, this year alone, there's going to be over 240,000 American men diagnosed with prostate cancer. So,
wow,
you know,
really?
A lot of them will not need radical surgery, you know, the robot, but there's a lot of cancer out there, and men have to step up to the plate and allow themselves to be diagnosed.
Yes, they do. And for some men, that's kind of scary, isn't it?
Well, yeah, because every man is worried about losing that one thing that he dreams about day and night, 24/7. That's getting an erection that'll last all night.
Yes.
Or all day.
Or all day.
Or
so,
both.
So I have an off-the-air question, which is kind of, a lot of people are not very confident about calling in. But, you know, to be heard live on the air. But so the question is, why would a guy text pictures of his penis to a woman? And my first thought was, for the same reason a dog drops a stick at your feet, he wants to play but lacks the vocabulary to articulate
it. Well, you know, I can't get my arms around that concept at all.
Me neither. You know, the guy who sends the picture and the high definition picture of their gear and the burning question, hey, you up?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, when you look at it graphically, you see, you know, a naked woman who has a well-shaped bosom, who has a flat stomach, who has a curvaceous derriere, who has slender legs. I mean, there's something aesthetically pleasing about that. I don't think there's much aesthetically pleasing about a photograph of a penis. I'm sorry to say that.
No.
I mean, it's a functional organ. You know, it's a man's favorite plaything. But to call it aesthetically pleasing, I think would be a stretch.
Yeah, and this is coming from a man who has seen. You've seen thousands and thousands of penises over the years.
I've been quoted as having seen more penises than could fill the Rose Bowl.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
I want to briefly go back, just so we don't forget, because I do have clients who suffer from premature ejaculation.
Right.
And in the handout you gave to us for the ASEC conference, you said a newer drug, Prilig, how do you pronounce that?
I'm not sure exactly.
Prilig.
Yeah, Prilogy.
Has been developed specifically for the management of premature ejaculation. And I know that the SSRIs have also been used. But what about this newest drug?
Well, nobody's had a lot of experience with it, and I think it's an off-label use of that drug, so it's not widely used. Mostly we use the antidepressants. But I also, you know, I like to get away with those mind-altering drugs because they all do something, you know, between your ears. So I like the squeeze me, please me technique, the Valsalva maneuver, the withdrawal, the exercises between couples, and those are the things that really help for me the most and the ones I recommend to my patients, especially in the younger men. You know, I often say, you know, make sure that you masturbate before you go out on your first date with a hot babe, because that will delay your second ejaculation, the so-called responsive, non-responsive period. I mean, there's lots of ways to get around it. So I'm kind of in principle get away from the pharmacology of treating premature ejaculation.
Yeah.
And I'd like to use the more au naturel.
Right. But for some guys, just like using Viagra or Cialis, it gives them a little confidence.
Yes, I agree with that.
That bridge that we talked about earlier.
The bridge, I like that.
Yeah, and so that can make a difference. So I live near a fire station, so you're going to hear.
In your soundproof booth.
Yeah, not so much. So I thought I'd run a few myths by you, kind of under the heading of "You don't know dick."
Okay, good one. Why didn't I think of that?
Oh yeah, well you know your book is fabulous. So.
Okay.
The first one is, shoe size is a good predictor of penis size.
Absolutely not.
Right.
It just says nose size. Look, as a general rule, a 7-foot basketball player is probably going to have a larger penis, you know, than a 4-foot, you know, 5-inch soccer player. But it is definitely not a 1-to-1 ratio. I have seen, you know, absolutely the reverse. You know, huge penises on very little men and little penises on very huge men. So definitely a myth.
Right. And it's not for lack of research, because studies have examined correlations between penis size and race, height, build, and the size of a man's feet, hands, and even butt.
Right, absolutely.
So the next myth is, you can't break a guy's penis since boners don't contain bones. So let's talk about that for a moment.
Well, it's true. A boner is clearly a misnomer. There are no bones in a male penis.
Mm-hmm.
You can, there is an injury called a, quote, fracture of the penis, which is probably, again, a misnomer. But there are some accidents in which a fully erect man will get a traumatic blow or maybe some wild and crazy sex, and he will actually break the corpora, this rigid shell that's around the casing that holds the blood, and sometimes that needs to be repaired. That's a very unusual injury, and it is called a fracture, but it is a misnomer. It's more like a rupture.
A rupture, yes.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
More of a rupture. And it sometimes happens, as I understand it, with a woman on top with kind of wild sex.
Right. It usually is an unintended consequence.
Right.
You know, there's one myth, the great myth of penis enlargement, which I...
Oh, that was my next one, and
we need to talk about that before the show ends. I beat you to it. So,
yeah, no, that's
so,
right.
You know, having seen... So let me preface it by saying a couple of things. Having seen more penises than Phil the Rose Bowl and a lot of women attached to those penis, husband, lover, friend,
right.
I have never had a woman come into my office and say, Dr. Danoff, can you make my man's penis longer, fatter, wider? They have said, can you make it a little bit firmer and attach it to a sweeter, nicer guy, preferably
exactly.
with a Platinum American Express card? So every man, you know, in his mind wants a larger penis, you know, but it can't be done, and woe be to the man that wants to try it. So there were a number of doctors doing, quote, phalloplasty, penis enlargement surgery, in which they were implanting silastic fat grafts, all sorts of things. It cannot be done. It cannot be done. A man must be satisfied with what he is genetically dealt. Thank his mother and father for his penis size. We can make it firmer, we can make it harder, but we can't make it longer or wider.
And it's sort of really discouraging that there are some MDs out there that are promoting this and saying that they can do it.
It's absolutely unforgivable. It's reprehensible.
Because it just doesn't work.
And the reason it doesn't work, I mean, if you think about it, we could do a breast enlargement, we could do a rhinoplasty, fix your nose. The problem with the penis is it can be very small, and then it can get to be 10 times the flaccid size. So any material that we put in to enlarge the penis cannot settle, cannot take, cannot be grafted, because every man gets an erection in the middle of the night. So any material that we put in there, there's just no way to make it take, no way to make it stick, no way to make it durable, no way to make it smooth and not lumpy. So it can't be done. It's just, and believe me, Deanna, if I could do it, I'd work probably, you know, one day a year, then retire to the South Pacific and Fiji.
Of course. And I bet you say this, that heart-healthy behavior is penis-healthy behavior, that... The man should quit smoking, he should eat more low-cholesterol foods and get plenty of regular cardio exercise, maybe even squats, hip thrusts, and leg lifts, which sends blood rushing to the pelvic and gluteal area.
Right. All those things promote good health. And another thing, it also promotes penis size. And let me tell you what I mean by that.
Oh,
if a man has a large, protuberant penis, fat, big belly, hanging over his belt, and he looks down, he sees what appears to be a very small penis, because the penis comes out from the undersurface of the pubic bone. And if you've got 3 or 4 inches of prepubic fat, the penis has to traverse the fat of the prepubic bone, you know, and then rear its head out to the world. So if a man can lose his belly and lose the prepubic fat, and he looks down and he sees the penis coming right out from under the symphysis pubis, the pubic bone, the appearance of his penis is much longer, much greater.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why you hardly ever see any fat guys in a porno movie.
That's right. That's right.
That's the reason.
Yes. So... I've often contemplated this, that many of the facts of our lives can't be changed. So for a man, your penis is what it is, and maybe, you know, because I do lots of marital counseling, if you're divorced, you're divorced. But it's never too late to change your sexual story. So, you know, part of the motivation for my show, Love, Lust, and Laughter, and having guests like you is take charge of your sexual story. Use the facts to create something you like instead of a story that leaves you, oh, I don't know, incompetent or incomplete. Because after all, it is your story. And your philosophy in the book has a lot of that going on.
Well, I would say it's all about that.
Yeah.
Again, I am not a psychologist nor a sex therapist.
Oh, but you
but
could
as
be.
A mainstream urologist, I mean, that is the story.
Yeah.
It's all about the power of positive thinking. Do the best of what you have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's your friend. Treat it nice. Wash it, rub it, scrub it, perfume it, powder it. Talk to it.
Be kind to it.
Be kind to it. My goodness, yes.
Yeah, well, I am so thrilled that you've come back for a third interview on my program, Love, Lust, and Laughter. And certainly we've had a lot of laughter and lots of good information on this program. Thank you, Dr. Danoff, so much. And maybe I can entice you back for another, well, another show in a few months. I hope I can.
Well, that's very, very kind of you, and I always enjoy speaking with you, and I always enjoy learning something from you.
Oh,
and
thank you.
I appreciate the opportunity you give me to share some of my thoughts. Lots of people think they're off the wall, but I can assure you they're very mainstream.
Oh, yes, and people need to get your book, and what you have said in the Monterey County Weekly is, after the question, key things you hope people will take away from your book. Number one, when it comes to male genitalia, your penis is your penis. You can't change it. You can't make it bigger, longer, or wider. It's as reliable as you think it is.
Right.
And that's so powerful.
And that's
so powerful.
And so true.
And so true. You are a gem in this world, and you have so much to share that is really valuable. And I do. I just, well, I'm gushing, but I can't help it,
no,
Dr.
I want you to keep that up, and I want you to write a little note to my wife with that enthusiasm.
I love your wife. I got to meet her at the conference.
Yeah,
she's lovely. Aren't you a lucky man?
Thank you so much. Yeah.
Thank you again, Dr. Danoff.
My pleasure, and I hope we have the opportunity to do it again. And,
we will. I'll make it happen, and I'll be in touch with you.
And thank you.
All right, thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.